why we're back. That's what, okay.
That's what nothing like doing your life history in an hour.
Today is March 12th. This is National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is tape 2. We're again with Audrey Roth in her beautiful Victorian home. This time I am the interviewer. I'm Gabrielle Dinman, and Bess Karelitz will be the recorder. Now, Audrey, there are lots of stories you still have to tell us, but I'm going to ask you one question just to see if the tape is working. Since last week, have you been to any flea markets or antique sales?
No.
No? Okay.
No, I have not.
Okay. Audrey, last time I think we stopped with you and Don Brockett doing the abridged Fiddler on the Roof for fundraisers for the
Israel Bonds.
One question I want to ask you. You did this a lot.
We did it for, I think it was 2 years.
2 years.
Just about every other weekend.
Wow. Were you paid?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes, it was a professional engagement. Uh-huh. I don't remember, Bert Sales, who was, as Bess mentioned last week, who was with Israel Bonds, felt that we were a very effective fundraiser.
Very good.
So Don, Barbara Klee, as I mentioned, and I went to, I think we went to almost every town where Israel Bonds would be a factor in the tri-state area, West Virginia, Ohio, northern Pennsylvania. And we always made it a weekend, excuse me.
What years was that? Do you remember?
Do you know, I'm truly ashamed. I honestly don't. It had to be, because Barbie was in college and barely out. It had to be 23 or 4 years ago, I think.
Okay.
Somewhere in the early 70s.
And it was.
But we had a wonderful time doing it, and always we always had an overnight motel stay. We antiqued on the way to the show, and we antiqued on the way back. So it was wonderful. Because Don, if we passed a place, would only person I know that will U-turn and go back. So it was an interesting weekend, and the shows were wonderful, and the people were lovely. Always very hospitable hosts and in the various towns. So we saw a lot of rural and country, West Virginia, Ohio, and Pennsylvania.
Tell us a little bit about early TV. I see here on your resume you were the tipster for the home department, Evening Magazine.
Oh, Evening Magazine, yes. At its inception, they were doing number of auditions for various roles on the show as it was then. It then changed kind of dramatically. But Evening Magazine, when it began, had a host, a hostess, and Dave Durian, and the girl who's now Mayor Giuliani's wife.
Oh, really?
Was the hostess, yes. Donna, terrible, I can't remember her her name when she was here, but she came and was here. I don't remember if it was a year, year and a half with Evening Magazine. She left and then went, I think, to Florida. And I think that's where she and Mayor Giuliani met in Florida. I'm not sure, but she's at his wife at the moment. But she was the hostess at the time, and a man by the name of Dave Durian, who was wonderful. And then there were a number of other tipsters on the show. Donna Ray was one. Ted White. I can't at the moment think, but I did all the how to save time, trouble, and money in the home.
Okay.
And I remember my audition for the show, which was a lettuce dryer. And we did it with humor, you know.
And
saying,
it was all live.
Oh, yeah. No, all
it was,
taped.
It was taped,
and,
even then.
Uh-huh. And every week I had to get ready 2 or 3 tips that we would tape in advance. Because I think the show was on every night, but not every tipster was on every show. So, and the worst part of it was, you know, trying to think up things to do. and but it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And the Lynn Hayes Freeland was an assistant on the tipster grouping at the time. And the boy who's a very big executive at KDK TV now, Bruce Kaplan, was the producer of the tips. And nice crew, wonderful crew. They came to the house a lot, or we did it out somewhere, or if I found some wonderful place that sold used equipment that could be used in crafts, we taped there. And we went all over. It was an interesting time.
But what year was that?
That, I think, too, was early 70s. I think it was, maybe 75, mm-hmm. 74, 75, somewhere around there. Then they changed the format. They wanted it to appeal more to very young. So they were making it into a, I really can't even think of a word to describe what they wanted to do in the show, making a very, I can't think of the word they used at the time, but they wanted a more, what's the word I want? Yes, a very hip, yes, which is exactly what they wanted. Mm-hmm. And
okay. Now, how about this Cater Cousin on WIIC?
Oh.
What was that?
A friend of mine who's written some scripts for Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers writes most of his own, but occasionally there'll be. And Guy Urban, lovely young man, is producing shows at Channel 11 at the time for children, and called me. He wrote some very innovative scripts. They were wonderful. And I played Queens, and I played various and sundry. It was a musical and written script. And it was a very interesting show. Garnered an award, and then, of course, they did away with it.
Cater Cousin, for one reason or the other. Okay, and that was the name of Cater
mm-hmm.
Cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Cater.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cater food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's been an in-between. I did teaching for 3 years at the Robert Powers School.
Yeah, I want to hear about that.
That was Dorothy Finkelpore. It was then not Point Park College.
That's right.
It was affiliated, though, with the school that the Finkelpores had, which was Business Training College. And they had a lot of very nice students, and it was a very lovely time. I enjoyed that. Another friend of mine was teaching, too. I did fashion and style and some makeup, and then with that same friend, we did the charm classes at Carnegie Institute, and that was an interesting time. It was very interesting because we had a lot of women who were wives of corporate men whom the husbands felt hadn't quite grown with their jobs. And I don't know whether in some cases the husband sent them, in some cases the wives were interested in coming.
Or maybe the corporation sent them.
No, not really.
That's interesting.
No, these were the wives who were interested in improving style and improving makeup. And we used to tell them that it wasn't a question of not being aware or not being hip, but a lot of women weren't interested in fashion. So unless it's your business, yeah, but you know, and unless makeup is something that, you know, you've learned to do and you do it constantly, it's also not something that somebody's so deft at. So by the time we got through with them, though, they were just stunning
and you did
representatives for their husbands.
At the Carnegie?
Yes, Carnegie Institute. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It was one of the classes they
uh-huh.
offered along with painting and sculpture, and I don't think they offer it anymore. I think it's too politically incorrect.
And I see you also did this at Montefiore Hospital?
Yes, the nurses.
For the nurse?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And 17 Magazine? Now, where did that?
I did the 17 Magazine. I did the
17
magazine. Oh yes, for years I did the teen charm classes for Horns.
I see, that was at Horns.
For Horns, oh. Yes. In the downtown store, and also at East Hills when East Hills was functioning. and had a lot of nice young girls in those classes, and then at Monroeville Mall. So the department stores used to do a great deal more than they do now. I don't think they're still offering those, unless they are, and I'm not aware of it.
There's no more horse?
But, well, no, no. But I meant any right. of the other department stores. I use that term loosely since I do hope Lazarus builds in town.
Now, also, I have to know this. Mm-hmm. What are these Meridian films?
Oh, that was a very interesting time. Shortly after all the young men came back from the war, and boys from Carnegie Mellon who were drama majors, Bobby Finkel was one who became really a very big producer, director and producer in Hollywood. Bobby went together with an Ed Danino, was his name, and they started, Ed actually started Meridian Films, and he did a lot of the early TV commercials that were done in town. He also did, he and Bobby did, films for gas company, bank, their corporate movies that were produced. One we did was for DePaul Institute, and I played the mother of a young man born deaf, and it was followed right through to his graduation from college. And in order to tape that part, we used W&J, since it was close, and it's kind of a rural-looking, it's much more college-looking than, say, the University of Pittsburgh. So we taped out there. That was a very interesting movie. It was moving, and it was very effective, they felt, as far as the Institute. They felt it was a, they were looking for a moving commercial type film that showed what they were involved in and what they did and what their how a young boy, even with a handicap, if it can be called that, can grow, learn, graduate from college, and make a success out of his career. So we followed it right through. That was one of the films. Another was a very, with boys coming home from the service and getting off the train and going to the service, and I think that it was for the banks.
Now, were these commercials?
No.
These were regular teaching films?
These were, yes, they were. Industrial.
Industrial
films. And then Ed did, as I say, almost all the commercials that were done in town. He had the studio on, can't remember the street, very close to my home, as a matter of fact. And had a wonderful studio, really beautifully, and it was a rare thing in Pittsburgh at the time.
I'm sure.
He was really ahead of his time. So we did commercials for Braun Bread, for Westinghouse.
What did you do for Alcoa, you remember?
Alcoa, yes, it was air conditioning.
Oh,
or was that
wow.
Westinghouse?
No, that's Westinghouse. Alcoa,
I don't remember.
Oh.
I do remember playing a nurse for Seabreeze.
Oh, really?
We did one of the first Seabreeze commercials, yes. And the Braun Bread one, I remember because it was an all-day, long, long commercial. And the mother of one of the children that we were using in it, when she thought the taping was over, ate the salad. So
the taping was
no. No. So then they had to send somebody out. And you know, the markets weren't open then at night. This went on into the evening. So everybody had to scramble to find all the lettuces and tomatoes that the lady had eaten. And they must have found it all, because I remember we finished that night, but it was a long day, and poor soul was hungry, as were we all, but I think nobody thought of eating the salad, or maybe it wasn't beside us, or what have you, I don't know. I only know she ate the salad, and it caused a little consternation among the people. And then Ed had called to hire me for some commercial, and I can't remember what this one was. And I remember him coming to me and saying, the men loved you, except they want you to lower your eyebrows. Ed said, and I told them you could.
That will, but, well,
I said, but Ed, I really can't. He said, oh, they'll never know. They'll never notice.
About what years was that?
Well, I remember I did the, when it said to me, how much would you charge me? Because there, you know, AFTRA wasn't really, there was no union. Uh-huh. There were no really union fees at the time. This must have been 48, 49. And he said, how much would you charge me to do the DePaul Institute film? And I said, it as much as it cost me to get a new washing machine. So, I can't remember what that was at the time, but that was our joke about my fee. So I wish I could remember what it was. It was probably in today's, not much, but I don't remember. Isn't that terrible? I don't, it isn't, but he teased me about that for a long time.
It says here also that you were the makeup artist for the film.
I did, when Ed had people come into town, the governor, governor's wife, I did makeup for them. Everybody sort of did everything in those days, Gabby. It wasn't a, oh, no, that's not my thing, you know, or no, I can't do that. It was, you did whatever was needed, and if you were able to. So,
you mentioned the governor's wife. Last week as we were leaving, when the tape had run out, you casually mentioned when you were at the Kennedys. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yes, we used to do, Ethel Kennedy had a charitable event. She didn't have it, but it was called the Pet Show in Washington. It's a very famous event, and it used to be an invited event. It was very elitist and invited, and only those parents who got invitations could bring their children, who were permitted to bring their pets then, that would be judged as, by the time we got around to it, it was no longer such an elitist event. Tickets were sold, and it was a very popular event. She had a huge property in McLean, Virginia. Beautiful, beautiful, large backyard, and a pool and pool house, and the Mr. Rogers neighborhood people, Joe Negri, Don, Bob Trow, and I, not Fred, traveled down once a year to do the show. And it was, they were interesting years. We stayed either at the Watergate or at the Key Bridge Marriott, and that was just a short hop to her house. And she was kind enough to have us every year to lunch after the event. The event was a morning event, and it was not a fancy pet judging contest. Children used to bring their turtles, they'd bring fish, they'd bring some mangy dog, they'd bring a cat, they'd bring whatever, a guinea pig, and Art Buchwald was the judge. And of course,
my word, it sounds fun.
And the some of the Washington football team. I can't remember what that team's called. The Washington.
Oh, they are Senators.
Are, yeah. No, that's
baseball, isn't it? Uh-huh. I can't remember what they're called. Used to come, and
something
they had
skins, Redskins.
Redskins.
Yeah.
And they used to have an obstacle course. Everything was there was a charge for everything. There was a charge for our little show, which we did originally in the pool house, and then in later years we did it in her basement, which was above ground. And people came in one door into this big room in the basement, and we had our little show set up there and went out the other. So we did four or five shows at a time, you know, little short musical shows. And they had celebrity tennis at the same time. There'd be Teddy Kennedy or one of the Kennedys there to play tennis with whoever chose to pay to play. I think it was probably, you know, your 5-minute bat the ball across the net. And then they had an obstacle course that the Washington Redskins ran for the children. And the kids all seemed to have a wonderful time. And it was a nice morning. And then afterwards, as I say, she had always had us for lunch, and she had some of the Washington Redskins who were her friends for lunch. And then Teddy Kennedy or Ethel Shriver would be there, or Eunice, and a very homey home, a very lived-in.
Well, she had all this
looking,
children.
Yes,
yeah.
And always in the basement, these huge turtles wandering around that were pets of the children.
Now, was this also a fundraiser for?
It was a fundraiser, yes, and every year it was a different charity for children.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember now what the charities were exactly, but every year it was, I don't remember whose choice it was, I suppose a committee chose what charity would would reap the benefits of this event. It was an interesting trip. They were all interesting trips.
How many years? For how many years did you do it?
I think about five. And she was a wonderful hostess.
Was she already widowed at that time?
No. Wait a minute. Yes, I think she. Yes. Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember. Yes, she was.
Because I know they had those Special Olympics. I don't know if they were there.
Yes, she was widowed at the time, and but she was most hospitable. Couldn't have been nicer to us, and the kind of person which was so shocking to me. The second or third year, we walked in, hello, Audrey, hello, Don, you know, that kind of thing. And when her son died, I wrote her a letter of condolence, you know, never expecting to hear, because I'm sure she must have received that, and had a lovely little personal note on the printed condolence that they sent out, which I think is very, very thoughtful. So when I read negative things about, well, you know, negative things, it doesn't matter with people. It's whatever kind of personal experience you've had with them, which colors your feeling about them.
But do you have other things to tell us about famous people? Were you ever at the Heinz's?
We
did. Any of their picnics?
No. Just tacky parties at Fred's with Teresa and her husband. And they were nice people. We had a good time, good sense of humor, fun. But, you know, sometimes isn't it strange how you can remember something 50 years ago so much clearer than you can something that happened last week? And a lot of the experiences early in my life that I don't talk about very much, only because they involve my life or my year in California, which was with my ex-husband, so I don't belabor it, and yet it was a part of my life. And it was enjoyable in that it was kind of a carefree time, and every time I hear people saying what a decadent life, I think of, you know, the time we spent out there, which was anything but decadent, because Gene Kelly and his wife Betsy, we got together at our different homes quite often once a week or so to play the game, you know, charades. I mean, not charades, but act out a title, a film title, or a book title.
Well,
and it was June Allison, who was a good friend of mine from, she was in Best Foot Forward also. And then Stanley Donen was another who became a really big director and producer, who I've often thought Stanley's still around. You know, he did Daddy Long Legs. He did, I think, Stanley produced or directed Gigi. It was a Southern boy who was a D-O-N-E-N, Donnan. And he was captain of the chorus in Best Foot Forward in New York. He used to go around with his Southern accent, half an hour. And a terrible hypochondriac. And this is when I was 19. Stanley couldn't have been, when we were in California, couldn't have been more than 23, 24, and was already seeing doctors on a regular basis. He always had some complaint. And I've always laughed because I thought, he's still around and functioning very well, so.
Did you know Gene Kelly from here, or did you know
Gene Kelly choreographed Best Foot Forward.
I see.
But I didn't really know him then. Met him in California. He was married to a girl by the name of Betsy Blair. And it's familiar to you because there was one big movie she played in. And I'll disappoint you because at the moment I can't think of the name of it either. It had to do with, do you remember it was a very shy girl and I think he played a butcher.
Not Marty.
Marty.
Okay.
Betsy Blair played the lead in Marty. But at the time we were all together, they had just had their baby, Carrie, with a K, who's now a psychoanalyst in England, and she would be today about 53 or 4, but they used to bring her in a basket to the various homes. We always had Carrie, and then there was Nancy Walker, who was always a part of the group.
I remember.
Yeah, and she was a fabulous comedian. Uh-huh. And in later years, she always did the Bounty commercials.
Right.
Do you remember?
Right.
And Nancy had a little sister. Nancy's father was named Dewey Bartow. He was a burlesque comedian. And the girls were brought up on the road without a mother. Their mother had died. And Nancy was sort of a mother to the sister. And when she was in town, Nancy's sister was always involved. But I thought, this is the kind of entertainment that that all of us were involved in. Nobody drank, nobody. We just had truly good, serious fun. And June lived in an apartment not too far from ours. We lived in an apartment on South Lasky Drive, where I had my first dinner party. I'd never really cooked a meal in my life, and there was a boy from Carnegie Mellon, an actor, who would have become successful, I think, but he died, by the name of Bill Ife. And his friend was Max Factor's son, and I can't remember his first name, and they were coming to dinner. And my landlord helped me, or told me how to cook chicken. And I served it, and it wasn't quite done. It was a hideous party.
Okay. I think that's why
that's why I haven't felt kindly toward cooking ever since. But, you know, I saw somebody cut it. Fortunately, they had both had a few drinks before they arrived, and I sort of thought later maybe they didn't notice that there's a little blood on the chicken as they cut into it. So.
Now, it says.
And then.
Go on.
No, when we first arrived there, I met Arthur Freed, who was a musical producer at MGM. And Gil was doing Girl Crazy. And I met him, and he offered me a contract at the time. And it was the time when I wasn't supposed to be working. I've thought since I've done. It wouldn't hurt me. You know, I'd be working, I'm sure. But my uncle and my father had both said, no, can't do that. And or you'll get into very serious trouble. I'm sure I wouldn't have. But at any rate, I didn't take him up on that. And then later, after Gil was born, he was about 4.5 months old when I went out to California for 10 days. Norman Torog, the director, I saw when we were out one evening, and said to me, if you want to come back to California, we will sign you. I'm doing 6 pictures. And he said, you can have a part in every one. He was kind of dear. He was really a lovely man, and said, and you can go home every night alone. Didn't quite understand that until later. Surprising had done. And so I did come home. I worried about, well, how would I manage with Gil, and yet a friend of mine out there that I had met had an Irish nurse who had a friend who was looking for a job. So she said, not a problem, you know, you'll have. So I came home and discussed it with my family and thought, what should I do? Do I want this? Don't I want this? And I ended up deciding I didn't want it. Now, later you think, was it dumb? You know, I was then 20. Was it dumb that I turned this down, or was it smart? And since I've always been very happy, I thought, well, you know, maybe I would have been equally happy. I don't know. But I don't think I've ever regretted it. It's interesting to think about.
Sure.
You know, we all think about the what might have beens. I think it's part of life, and part of getting older, and part of, and you dismiss it after about 30 seconds of thought, and that's all it involved. But it was an interesting time because there were so many interesting people. Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine, who had written the songs for Best Foot Forward, were at MGM then too, and were writing for Lena Horne, and were writing for Judy Garland. You know, they did the trolley song and all the songs for that movie. They just had a show in New York about two or three years ago, and it was, I think it was that same movie they were putting on stage, and right at the moment, I can't think what it was called, and it was a huge costume epic, and it was not terribly successful. So I felt bad, and then I read in the New York Times about a year ago that Ralph had died, but they were two really charming, wonderful men, and we had a cook who did teach me a few things. Like how to garlic certain things and how to do, but I wasn't terribly successful at it, and never had to. When I was out there, you know, it wasn't kind of like where you had to do a great deal of cooking.
Do you cook now?
Always.
Mm-hmm. You like to cook yet?
No.
No. Because last week you said your ideal day is breakfast out and taking lunch out.
No, as a matter of fact, I cook a good bit. I always have. And now that Wheel Deliver is around, one or two nights a week, because we really go out very rarely, so one or two nights a week I order in. Or we bring a meal in. Yesterday I brought a meal in from Abate. We had to be out at Waterworks, so stopped at Abate and bought a little pasta and some interesting food.
Is there anything else you want to tell us about Hollywood or showbiz, or shall we talk about?
I don't think, Gabby. I think
Now, are you current? Now, you've done a lot of volunteer work. Do you want to list it?
Oh no, that's right. I couldn't even.